You are listening to CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Mercurio, and I'm a principal attorney with the law firm Offutt Kerman, and this is Pinnacles. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with my friend, Jim Fitzgibbons. Jim is the founder of SDG Strategy Group. Jim, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
SDG Group, Strategy Group. Tell me about your company and what do you do?
Okay, yeah. SDG Strategy Group, Mike, is a small consulting firm, advisory firm. We typically work with small mid-market private equity firms, M&A attorneys, small family offices, buy-sell firms, that kind of thing. And Mike, we look at their portfolio of companies and we try to see if we can help them in any way gain more momentum, you know, more profit, more EBITDA, better valuations when they sell. So if a firm has, let's say, 10 companies that they own in their portfolio, it's our experience that five of them are underperforming, underwater. Not failing, they're not goners, but they need help, that kind of thing. So that's where we come in.
Great. So I want to learn more about your services and your customers and all that, but first, I want to go a little further back. Tell me, where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
I grew up in Schenectady, New York, upstate New York, freezing cold, in a family of three brothers, three sisters. So mostly medical. My father was a surgeon, and everybody's in nursing or medicine, and I was one of the lone rangers in the business world. So
All right. So how did you get into the interest in business? Was there an experience or a mentor or a person that had some influence on you?
Probably a ton of them. I'm trying to think of. In the early days, I'll mention something. I had a painting company, an outdoor home painting company.
Personally,
yeah.
Wow.
Just as going through college, you know, so we had a bunch of ladders and trucks and that kind of thing, and we'd do outside house. Nothing inside, too delicate inside. You can move the brush fast outside. So it was a lot of fun. We made some pretty good money. It helped to pay for a lot of things that, you know, you want as a young person. But kind of brought that with me, knew a lot of friends of mine that tried different things. I had a friend who had a polo shirt company, in college and different things like that. Always intrigued me. I always liked the idea of building an idea yourself, weaving that fabric together, selling it, making a profit. So that's what.
So what did you ultimately do with the painting company? Just curious.
Yeah, that was sold. It was two of us.
You sold it.
I sold it to my partner, Mike.
Wow.
He wanted to continue with it, and I was, I think I had graduated by that time, can't remember. Mostly summers, little, you know, holiday seasons, that kind of thing. It was a lot of fun.
So you're in the club of having built a business and sold a business?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Maybe
long time ago.
We're going to dig in.
Maybe made $10, I don't know.
He didn't retire at 21.
I'm still here.
Yeah, okay. So I do want to, again, I want to talk more about SDG Strategy Group, but I know you have had some past experiences. Tell me a little bit about your past work experience now, like moving forward. I know you were longstanding work with AT&T.
Yeah.
I even saw sports marketing on your resume.
That's
Tell
right.
us a little bit about some of your background and eventually how you got to here.
I hate to bore you. Yes, after college, moved down to, you know, this area, that kind of thing. My wife's a civil engineer by trade, so she was with GE's real estate and construction operation. And Mike, I had a long-term career with AT&T. They put me on their high potential program, and from that, they dance you around their various business entities, you know, sales and marketing operations. You're in the marketing balls for a couple of years. A lot of fun, a lot of good training. Great people, just some of the smartest people I've ever worked with. But from then, around the year 2000, I started with some friends, a dot-com company. Confidant was what it was called, and it was it sounds kind of quaint now, but I mean, it was one of these firms that would allow you to listen to your voicemail or listen to your email. Had a certain software to it, and we were just pre-money, that kind of thing. And I very distinctly remember calling my wife saying, hey, you know, Karen, we're this thing, they've been valuing this thing at $80 million and we just made $5 million, whatever, wow, equity. When the dot-com thing went down, they all went down, including that. But started a firm in around 2003 called SDG America that was working with offshore firms,
okay,
coming to the U.S. So if you were in anywhere, France, Italy, Israel, you wanted to be in the U.S., wanted to sell your products or services to the commercial market, to the federal market, we would be your proxy on U.S. soil.
Okay.
I had a partner, and she was also an attorney by trade, and she would work doing law services for these firms, but they also wanted to be on U.S. soil, didn't know the language very well, business protocols very well, mm-hmm, and we built SDG America. We'd work with the embassies, we'd go see the embassies, heads of missions, consulates, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they helped to bring over some business for us. And then from then, I really had the itch to continue with different businesses. Began doing what I'm now doing with a partner. 2014, Mike, if I remember correctly, and just stumbling over business. It wasn't because I was the smartest person in the world. I would just talk to people. It really started with some friends, had some failures mm-hmm. in their company, and would I come up and take a look at it, and did, and would make some suggestions for changes, and whatever it was, organization or operations, sales and marketing, that kind of thing, and was sort of had a knack for it, sort of is the best way to put it, and went on to kind of hone that skill, still doing it myself, mm-hmm. reached out to and most private equity, small mid-market private equity, it's not the big ones, they don't need me for anything, but the smaller ones had a need, you know, again, as I was saying earlier, if they had, you know, 10 companies, 10 assets, half of them typically were underwater in one way or another. Or needed help. You know, many of them would acquire a firm, want to fatten it up, want to sell it within 3 to 4 years. And if it wasn't selling, something was wrong or needed some help. That
it's
kind
a typical
of thing.
Private equity model, right? Buy, grow, sell.
Yeah.
3 years.
Right. And the smaller ones typically don't have a lot of you know, an MBAs they could just throw at it. The big ones would, frankly, laugh at what I do. I mean, they're totally covered. But the smaller ones need help, and it's a very trusted sort of position. It's the kind of thing you have to go in and speak with them a lot. They mm-hmm. believe that you have the goods, and also that you're going to have an engineered something at the end of it where mm-hmm. they're going to increase revenue, increase mm-hmm. profit, have a higher multiple mm-hmm. on a sale. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do.
So is it safe to say that your current firm sort of grew out of experiences, your past experiences, I mean, you had vast experiences in business, and your Rolodex, so to speak, people would, you know, obviously come to you and say, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And you got a lot of those, what do you thinks? And this is how SDG Strategy Group was born.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. So it would be would you mind going in and just listening, maybe talking to the CEO, CFO, you know, COO? And actually, Mike, when we go in, we talk with everybody in the company on the first day, boiler room through executive suite, to get an understanding of whether they're all in sync on the strategic plan, which rarely are, frankly, even the C-suite people, what the sales and marketing plans are, and if they're working, that kind of thing. And oddly, usually the private equity group will have a feel for what they believe is wrong with the company, but it is not always correct. Once I go in, I will report back, and I give them a pretty detailed understanding of, you know, my observations and what I think we need to implement to correct it. But sometimes it's not in sync with what they believe is the truth. They may think it's easier than that, and it's mm-hmm. often not. Mm-hmm. So, and again, anything that we I'm right in there, so I'm not giving them a Bible of things to do. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Here's what I think we should do it, and I will do it, and I'll be responsible for it. So I can't guarantee success, but you can monitor me all the way through the situation, and we hopefully at the end of it, we'll come up with a much stronger company, that kind of thing.
So let's drill down a little bit. So we know your clients are private equity typically, or mm-hmm. people with money in portfolios, mm-hmm. but give me a better feel for the parameters, the types of clients you would work for, revenue size, maybe industry,
okay.
geography, yeah, that's if it's question. Relevant, because we want to understand, you know, your client base.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's a great question. And it's that lower mid-market is revenue of $5 million to $50 million.
Okay.
We've done bigger than that, more than that. So usually this is a collection of investors that will put a fund together, $50 million fund, $100 million fund, and buy properties. Sometimes there's a theme, sometimes there's not. In other words, would they buy all oil and gas kind of companies, software companies, whatever. To your other question, so I've worked with media companies, IT companies, both software and hardware, consulting firms that do specific consulting, the offshore companies, that kind of thing, tool companies, industrial tools. So it's been a wide mixture. There's sometimes companies that we come across, that I come across, that, you know, the frank truth is, although I understand the business from a functional standpoint, I may not understand it from a long-term being in it. I mentioned oil and gas earlier. That is one. But on the we do have a lot of resources. So yeah. I do know a lot of people that have specialty businesses, specialty expertise, you know. So we'll bring them in under our umbrella to look at it for oil and gas, mm-hmm. for example, or something else. But that's pretty much the parameters of what we have seen so far. It could be any product or service.
Okay, so there's no business is business. There's no industry or vertical.
Unless it's very saying. Eclectic, Mike. Unless it, yeah. medical devices, that okay. kind of thing. I'm not a doctor, although I understand how they want to take a product and get it to market, price it.
I get it. Would you do government contracting type
yes.
of clientele?
All day long.
All day long.
All day long.
Got it.
In fact, I have a guy who's probably one of the best government contractors around, and a professor over at George Mason, and a wonderful guy.
I do remember you had some background you had a business yeah. in government contracting, some sort of consulting business, I remember, but I digress for a second, but yes.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. So same thing with these offshore, back to SDG
yeah.
America,
yeah.
So we'd have firms that want to knock on every federal door, but we'd have to coach them as to how it really works,
right.
and frame
right.
up a business for them, you know, literally an office and a telephone and a computer and go to market strategy. So, yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about, or let's go deeper into the services you provide, because I know that you can do lots of things, but they're typically, because we've talked about this,
mm-hmm.
a handful of services that are the low hanging fruit, if you will, or the immediate, you know, home runs
yep.
For sales and marketing, for example. Tell us a little bit about what you typically do when you get in on one of these underperforming assets.
Yeah, it's a discovery
yeah, okay.
issue. It's a discovery issue. So I don't really know. I will be persuaded to some degree by what the private equity group tells me.
Yeah.
So we bought this for this reason, and we expect this kind of thing. It's not happening. It's sliding sideways. What do you think we should do? Go take a look. So let me frame it. So if I go into any company, Mike, I will look at... I'll start out with the obvious, and that is last 3 years P&L. And I go through the P&L. I will gloss over it, frankly, because I want to understand the P&L in context, which I don't have yet until I talk to somebody. So I'll look at that, and I'll see some issues. Some are glaring, some are not. And I just will have a set of questions that come from that.
So you're comfortable, stopping for a second, you're comfortable with the financial reading of the financial
Absolutely.
Data
yeah,
and analysis of the same.
Yes, it's critical. It's critical to really understand the life of the company. If you don't understand that, you may hear of a problem and fix that problem, but still, when they're making money or not making money, EBITDA, right? Earnings, that would be a critical piece. But to continue, so then I usually want to see the I do start at the bottom, mm-hmm. not in detail, but just to understand what people's functions are, because I'll get a understanding of the personality of the company from the bottom up. And then when I start to get up at this, I'll do sales and marketing, the C-suite, organizational structure, operations, HR and legal. Uh-huh. I'm not an attorney, I just want to understand if there's any issues relative to legal issues uh-huh. or contract issues, that kind of thing. And supply chain. Supply chain meaning where they get their goods, how they price them, what kind of strategic alliances they have. So it takes a little bit of time, can't do it in a day, but usually can do it pretty well in a week or two, and I have a composite of thought. And I, during all that time, of course, I'm using my computer to write and assemble these different buckets with the goods that I've gleaned from the conversations. And sometimes it's easy. Sometimes there is a big hole. Often there's not, though. Often it's an experiential thing. So having done this kind of thing for 30 years, I can see it. Not always, but a good amount of the time. Perhaps a doctor can look at you and say, you know, we'll just know if you're sick or not. But once identified, I try to hammer down to, you know, okay, so now what? What do we change? Mm-hmm. Often a PE group will want to let certain people go or some people go. It's rarely correct in my experience, because that could be the linchpin for something else that may have not understood. But knowing that there is a goal of increased revenue, increased profit, increased EBITDA as well, and then, you know, the final thing of sale at the end of it.
Yeah.
With that goal in mind, we're trying to arrive at that goal. So everything, every day, every momentous occurrence we have is to increase the valuation of the firm. That's the end of the day. That's what they want. Always, and it never changes.
But you're not necessarily dealing with distressed, right? Or turnaround,
no.
right?
No.
That's definitely. You're not dealing with companies that are just sinking quickly.
If they're sinking,
you're dealing with, yeah.
Quite
right?
correct. If they're sinking, yeah. Mike, we tell them. And I've done that a number of times. I said, you know, it's not. This is a restructure. This you probably should see your attorney on this, because or a recapitalization. Some of them are totally out of money and they want to make it up with a sale or something like that. No, they're just underperforming in whatever way you want to look at that. Some of them have been more difficult. I actually worked on a firm for 1 year, not full time, but off and on, and followed their sales and marketing and. Some of the other implement. That's another thing we'll do. We'll monitor what we put in place, change it if we need to. But it may need. But the guidance we give up front may change over the course of time if things start to get better. But yes, to your point, they're not failed companies. They just need attention that a small private equity group. Can't frankly give it.
No, the bandwidth
to do that. Bandwidth, right?
So, would you say one of your competitive advantages over other M&A consultancy firms? Not to lump you into that, but category is the fact that not only do you do the analysis, you do the tactical piece too.
It's a game changer.
They get you.
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not there talking about coaching issues.
Yeah.
Of, you know, do this and do that and watch the seminar, that kind of thing. I'm in the bowels of the company there. I'm in the whole bloodstream, because if you don't understand that, you could be pretty smart, and I think you could make some changes, but it's that coupled with a trust issue, Mike, is the most key element in sales. If they don't like me internally now,
yeah, yeah.
or believe me,
yeah.
or if they don't think I have their common good at heart, mm-hmm. and it's a tricky thing,
yeah.
Quite honestly. And it doesn't happen on the first day. They may even ask me, are you here to fire me? You know? No, I'm working for the owners, and we'd like to make it better with your help. They could, you know, usually in these kind of deals, the previous owner has a 1 or 2 year agreement to stay aboard. bring the institutional knowledge
maybe
over
to me. Maybe financially incented to do better,
and
right?
I was going to add, you know, so yeah, because they will make more money and yeah, it's to their benefit. Yeah. So I, knowing that, I say, you know, let's do it together. So I'm not here to tell you how to do a job you've been doing for 10, 20 years, whatever it is. I'm here to understand what you do, and together we can change some things. Or you may alert me that that's we tried that before, it didn't work for the following reasons. Or I can tell you something that's worked in other firms like yours that I know.
But you're not typically employed, right?
Typically not.
You don't come in as the CFO or the chief.
I do not.
Whatever. That might change the dynamic, perhaps the independence.
I never take an equity stake. No, okay. I never take a commission based upon some results. It changes your mind. I could go.
That's true.
I could change a firm in one day by just letting three people go. P&L looks great. You know, that's not it. That's
Well, likewise, we don't take success fees as a law firm. Well, some will do
no
that
success
kind of
fees, right?
Because of the fact it changes the dynamic. The
totally conflict. Changes your head.
Yeah. You could.
Yeah. So no, don't do that. Typically, Mike, I'm compensated either on the as a 1099 as a contractor for mm-hmm. the private equity group, but more commonly, I'm on the P&L. As a contractor to the firm I'm fixing. So I'm an added load, arguably, yes, but you know, the idea is to change your ground.
Private equity makes you, you're a cost of
yeah,
the cost actual of company.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah, typically.
Okay.
But not always.
Yeah. Jim, so I'd like to drill down a little bit on cost, since you're a cost center typically to the company, mm-hmm. which provide a lot of value. So what do you cost? Or how do you charge? That's a better question.
Yeah, it's typically by project, Mike. We do have an hourly rate, but I have to look at the project because I frankly don't know yet how long it's going to take me to paint your house. I don't know. I have to see the rooms. I have to see the condition and all that kind of thing. So typically by project, but I, without going into the numbers exactly right now because they're different for different... Yeah. obligations. It's typically project base, and it typically is arguably a third of what a large, you can name any of them, one of the large consulting firms would charge, probably a third. And I think we have every bit as much cerebral capability. So, yeah.
So if it is safe to say you get big firm, so to speak, quote unquote, experience, you've been doing this, not practicing, but doing your work 30 years, and I know some of your colleagues the same.
I don't have the kind
with
of overhead.
With a personal touch, right.
Personal touch,
at a third of the cost. Wow.
I have firms that I've worked with a couple of years ago that I stay in touch with, see how things are, even if they've moved on, you know. We just don't have that quite overhead structure that we need to support.
So let me switch a little bit here, switch it up. And, you know, you've been around business a long time and you've interacted with lots of businesses. And one of the reasons why we do these interviews is because, you know, at least I believe that, you know, as a business owner or a business person, most of what we need to know is out there. Just got to discover it.
Absolutely.
And talking to folks like you is really helpful to people who are still walking up that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And What in your business life cycle, have you run into any challenges or barriers that you had to overcome in starting your various businesses or even with the current business? What, you know, everybody has stumbling blocks or obstacles. Couldn't all be perfect, right?
Yes, Mike. So stumbling blocks, wow. Well, I mentioned earlier that, you know, back in the year 2000 had a .com company and this company called Confidant. High flyer, we were, I think we had $10 million of capital from a group out of New York. And things were going well until the wave of dot-com failures took away basically our bankroll. So, very difficult at the time because it had the right market, had the right people, the structure was going well, and then something separate washed it out. Perhaps even like we're seeing with coronavirus today, we don't know how deep that's going to go, but it's altering the stock market and many other things. But so that was a difficult time to recover from that. I think we built that company to 43 people and in a respectful way, let people go, that kind of thing. And but it was a great, great learning piece, expensive, but probably the most fun I ever had in my life. And that carried over to the DNA that I have with me today about these small businesses. So I have a heart about it as well, not just always, you know, very few things are very cut and dry in business, as you well know. Mm-hmm. They change in complexion and color over time. One day they're hot, next day they're cold. And businesses, although probably the most fun to have, it's probably one of the most difficult things to do as well.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I find with my client base that many of them really work in a vacuum or in a tunnel. And many of them, I don't think they believe this, but if they thought about it, maybe they would say, yeah, they believe that time is a multiplier of value. It's not always the case. So, you know, if I work two more years, my company worth two times more,
that's right,
perhaps.
That's right.
And that is, and the other thing is that, to your point about the coronavirus, is market conditions.
Absolutely.
Many people don't ever consider the market conditions. They're like, well, I'm humming along, right? I'm humming along. And 100%. Wham, like you said, the .com, you know, bubble or bust. I mean, that's really a gut punch.
Yeah, it truly is. And it's a very good way of looking at the business, because it does change over time. And clients of yours, you know, that's why they have people like you, Mike. They need somebody to watch that next step that they are going to take, no matter what it is, business, personal life, and that kind of thing. So
what do you find, taking the flip side, what do you find most rewarding about doing what you do?
This is from the heart and something I tell my wife all the time, because she doesn't know the people I typically work with, but they're kind of like family. I worry about them. I literally worry about them. There's a good friend of mine now who's got kids and there are some difficulties, this kind of thing. So that's very rewarding for me, I should say. In the big corporate world, very much enjoyed it. I did well and have many friends there, but it's the going to different businesses, completely different businesses, on a daily, weekly, monthly basis is, I love it. I just simply love it.
Well, you're a people person, and we are in the people business,
you
right?
You are.
You are, we are, and it's the fact that you enjoy interacting with people. We can't forget that we are intersecting with people, and the fact that you really care, it comes through.
That's all it is, Mike. That all is people and trust. And
so let me ask you, tell me your philosophy on this. Is there such a thing as good luck in business? You know, just being damn lucky, or is it people manufacture their luck? What do you think?
I think there is a concept of just being lucky.
Right place, right time.
Right place at the right time. On my way here, Mike, I was ahead of an accident that occurred behind me.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's luck or what it is, but I will also say, you know, and you've heard this 100 times, is that people make their own luck by working hard.
Yeah.
I think that's true as well. I think it's these maxims are sort of life maxims that we sort of understand over the course of time. People can work very hard and fail.
True.
And often I don't look at it that way. Okay, you tried but didn't work. Let's try something different. So there's a lot of sort of psychology about it. But we're very up. We try to be up with everybody we work with.
Yeah.
And there's some situations that are quite dire.
That are hard.
Tense, yeah.
They're hard. So if you had to give a piece of advice to an emerging entrepreneur, what would you tell somebody that wanted to get started in business? Like, what, you know, and I don't know, it's not an easy question, but, you know, what piece of advice? What would you tell them to, you know, consider?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess on the top of my head, I would say do it. Whatever it is, I get good coaching, talk to people, talk to us, you know, whatever it is, product or service, make sure you understand what you're getting into, and make sure you understand that you will have a good chance of failing. And I would also say this, and I think this is something I try to teach my kids, and that is, don't surround yourself with people who tell you why you can't do it.
Mm.
Don't surround yourself with those people, because almost everybody will tell you, "You crazy? Why are you giving up that job doing that kind of thing?" If you think it's a good idea, and you are operationally set, capitalization, all that kind of thing, do it. Worst thing can happen is that you fail.
Failure's not all bad,
it's
right?
Not bad.
I think people learn the most from failures.
You're 100%
at times,
right.
I think. So failure's not all bad. I mean, we don't all fail, but. So let me project out a little bit. Instead of going back, let's go forward. Where do you see yourself? Where do you see your business in 10 years, 5 years? Maybe 5 years is a better time period.
Well, again, something I was telling my wife a year ago is that I enjoy doing what I'm doing. Maybe I'll just do this forever, okay. Me.
Yeah.
But we were getting bigger opportunities, ones that would require more people, frankly, and more resources. And I was asked a number of times how big we can scale, what's our scope? I had an opportunity out of New York. I had one out of Ohio, Palo Alto. And so to answer your question, 3 years, I've got a couple of partners now, want more partners, want more resources, people that I think would be in sync with our personality. It's very fertile out there, very fertile, mm-hmm. for these lower mid-market private equity groups that need maybe a helping hand. And again, not the big ones, they don't need us.
Yeah.
But the smaller ones, and word of mouth has been very kind to us as well.
Do you think along those lines, I'm thinking, you know, the market is what it is presently. I see lots of private equity, all shapes and sizes, trying to deploy capital. Do you think the opportunity is going to be even greater when the market shifts? Because now they're all going to have these portfolio companies, and
yes. The
market conditions are not going to be as fruitful, perhaps.
Right. And you read some of that. You read, there's many headlines these days about just that, some pullback for private equity groups and all that kind of thing. It actually, oddly, helps me, because basically they'll take the bucket of companies that they have and want to perfect those instead of buy and sell, acquire and sell. Because we've fixed some that become, but they're not fully fixed, if you know what I mean. And we think we could do better and even have a higher EBITDA, higher valuation at the time of sale. So that hasn't affected us yet. And there's just an enormous amount of, you know, you've heard it 100 times, dry powder out there for people with money to assemble a small private equity group, go to market with it. My service, same as your services. It's an enormous need out there.
I think there'll be even greater demand for your services.
Absolutely.
As the market conditions maybe cool down, because it won't be so easy to make money, perhaps.
Won't be so easy.
So many deals on the table. They'll need to guys like you to really supercharge their portfolios. So, not to be too self-serving, but we've been working together a little bit. What is Offutt Kerman's relationship with your firm? Meant, hopefully something good.
It's been tremendously good, especially you, Mike. So I didn't really know about your firm until a number of months ago. And I just find you, and I say this from the heart as well, because I, again, this morning telling my wife I was coming up to see you and we're going to do this little project. And she goes, you know, I'd like to meet that. Because you spoke so highly of him, Jim, over the course
of,
I'm not kidding you, really. She goes, you know, I don't, it's not often that you speak about somebody that, and I know you're very skilled at what you do. I don't mean that, but just personality.
Thank you.
And that trust relationship. We don't know each other really well, but I've thoroughly enjoyed it, Mike, and I'm sure it's going to continue.
Yeah, so thank you. That's very kind of you. Yeah. And feelings mutual. Let me ask you one last question. You're more than a business. There's more to you than business. What do you do outside of business? We're not all just business 24/7. You must have other interests, right?
Yeah.
Hobbies, interests.
Yeah. Well, I like sports, so I like to watch it on TV. Mostly,
got it.
I see the Caps a lot.
Caps fan. Okay.
I used to play a lot of racquetball. Don't do that much anymore. I've hurt my shoulder. I got a rotator cuff. I'm getting so old, Mike. I go to the beach a lot, Outer Banks.
Okay.
And enjoy that down there. My kids are married. My daughter's having her first child soon.
Hey,
so that,
congratulations.
Thank you. And my son is doing very well. Works for a big software company. Knocking it out of the park. So life's good. Everything's
good.
This has been CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offit Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner. For more information and to tell your entrepreneurial story, visit us on the web at ceominutes.com.